The Mickey Mouse Podcast is brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. The vacation planners at MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel have the experience and knowledge to know how to get the best out of your vacation. So for your next trip, no matter where it is, be it a Disney destination or a non-Disney destination, don't take any chances. Visit the best vacation planners in the business at mei-travel.com, mousefantravel.com, or you can click on their banner on the Mickey Mouse Podcast website.
Hi, my name is Caitlin, and I love the Mickey Mouse Podcast.
This is the Mickey Miles Podcast. From 5K fun runs to full marathons, this is the podcast that helps you learn everything you need to know about running Disney races. The Mickey Miles Podcast is not affiliated with, authorized, or endorsed by, or in any way officially connected with Run Disney, the Walt Disney Company, Disney Enterprises, Inc., or any of their affiliates. Now, here are your hosts for the Mickey Miles Podcast, Michelle Scribner-McLean and Mike Scopa.
Welcome to episode 74 of the Mickey Mouse Podcast. My name is Mike Scopa, and with me on the show is one of three ladies. I will introduce the first one, and she, as you all know, is Michelle Scribner-McLean. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you, Mike. How are you today?
I am doing okay. How are you?
You don't sound sure.
I have long work days, and I get up real early to run, and I long for the weekends. Then the weekends get here, and I'm doing two back-to-back long runs. So I don't know what's better, the work week or the weekend.
Mr. Trainer. Yeah. I did my first bike ride today, which was really fun. I had a great time, and it was nice to kind of do something different.
That's good. So, it's always good to cross train.
Yeah. So I have a shout out. Somebody named Cliff Dix posted a really cute picture on our website. He ran the inaugural Strong for Life superhero sprint, and he has a picture of himself as Captain America, and he's running his first Disney marathon in January, and he's going to be running in costume. But I love it when listeners post pictures of themselves in races, and if you get a chance, look at his picture because he looks fantastic. So shout out to you, Cliff, and we hope to see you in January.
I hope so. This is a very special show because we're thinking about doing this show, and the objective here is to help a lot of you who are looking towards training for your first back-to-back Run Disney event. And we are talking about the Disneyland Dumbo Double Dare, which is Labor Day weekend, in which there is a 10K on, is it Saturday, and the half marathon on Sunday. So we have invited an old friend of ours, Helen Dunn. Helen, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Helen is, we brought in a ringer. Helen is an expert at this. Michelle and I and Helen have all done back-to-backs before. And what we wanted to do is we wanted to bring in a listener who had some questions. And so we're very pleased, and I'm very honored to introduce our very special guest. Her name is Kristen Jensen, and she comes all the way from Lakewood, California. Hello, Kristen.
Hi, Mike.
Why don't you tell us about yourself and about your running and all that good stuff?
Well, I just started running September with the Disney 5K, and that kind of got me hooked on everything. So I started... I waited a couple months until it set in, and then I started training for the Disneyland Half Marathon. So I'm doing the Galloway Method right now.
So are you planning to run both the 10K and the half?
Yep, I'm doing the Dumbo.
Wow.
Which 5K did you start off with, Kristen?
The Disneyland one in September.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Well, we wanted to find someone who had some good questions, and you've got some great questions, so we invited you to come on the show, and I'm going to let you ask us the questions, and we will try to answer them to the best of our ability to help you prepare for the Disneyland Dumbo Double Dare. Michelle is waiting for me to trip over that name. All right, Kristen, so give us your first question.
All right, so I was looking at the official Dumbo training schedule online that Jeff Galloway put out, and I noticed that there's a long walk on Saturday followed by a long run on Sunday. Now, say if I have a time goal, are the walks on Saturday sufficient enough, or should I be running both days to prepare for it?
Who would like to go first?
I think we should have Helen go first.
Okay, Helen.
Okay, I have to go first. Yikes. my opinion on this is, yes, the long walks work. I have done the Goofy Challenge three different times, and the back-to-back half marathons with the half marathon and the marathon relay, and I never in all of those trainings did back-to-back runs. I would always do my long run on Saturday and walk on Sunday. Varying lengths, but I never did the back-to-back runs.
So you did the run on Saturday and walked on Sunday? You did it opposite,
though. Yeah, I did it opposite just because that's how it worked out for my personal schedule. And it always worked out because for me, I have a background. I started my marathon career as a walker, so I'm walker-friendly, I guess. Like, I tend to fall back on that a lot. And it always helps me to work out any of the kinks from the run the day before. You know, you're not stressing the same muscles, but you're still getting time on your feet, which I think for these endurance, these back-to-back endurance things is the most important aspect.
Would you walk double the amount, Helen?
Sometimes, but probably not. I mean, our typical, you know, weekend around here, my husband and I, we usually would go for like a 5 to 10 mile stroll, you know, on the trails around here. And we would just keep that going. I mean, more, you know, as we would get closer to the races, they would be more in the 10 mile range, but never more than that. I never did huge miles.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but I think it's hysterical. Can you tell everybody what you call your training plan?
Well, I call it many things, but it's basically the slacker training plan. The do as little as possible and not get hurt and have a good time plan.
So I think that's actually a good segue because, Kristen, what I noticed, and I actually downloaded that training plan too, which just started up, and I have it on my calendar. I noticed the same thing. And I believe what Jeff Galloway is intending for that training plan is that you're finishing standing up, that you're finishing feeling okay. So if I were you, I would not necessarily, this is your first big race. Are you doing any other races in between then and now?
Yeah, I've been doing a few 5Ks and 10Ks.
Okay. I wouldn't push it because I think running back to back is a whole different beast. When you have a little rest after a half marathon or a 10K, it's different than, you know, getting up early one morning, then getting up the next day and running double the amount. So I would just, I would just say follow that plan and just plan to just finish feeling good and standing upright. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah, I think that's a good objective, especially if you've never done anything like this. You may not understand what happens on that second day. One of the things that that you mentioned, Kristen, that struck a chord with me is that you said you have a time goal. The very first time I did a back-to-back, I just wanted to finish, and I wanted to finish healthy. So my concern was trying to figure out how to do recovery the best between the two races. As far as everybody's an individual, and everybody has different ways of training. And some people may find Helen's way the best, and some people may find other training ways the best. So I think what you need to do is you need to try to figure out what is best for you. And if this training schedule works, you may want to try it one weekend. And if it works for you, fine. Can I ask you what your time goals are? I mean, that's a little personal, but I really am curious to understand, because it may help us figure out how we can answer your next couple of questions.
Absolutely. Well, since it's my first race, I kind of wanted to do it in 2:30, but I was thinking more like 2:45, but with all the characters and the crowdiness that I've heard of, I don't know.
One of the things that you'll find, and you may have found this out when you did the Disneyland 5K, is that it's pretty crowded, and mm-hmm. the Disneyland Resort was not built for runners, so it's very hard to to sometimes reach a certain goal. So just keep that in mind. Michelle, did you want to add something?
No, I wanted Helen to chime in here and give her opinion about running for speed at Disney races.
Oh, well,
running for time goals.
I think they are not the best races to do that. mostly because you're there. There's such a special occasion because there are so many things you can't see anywhere else. And, you know, when you see Darth Vader on the race course, like I did at Disneyland, you have to stop, even if there are a million people in the line. And you don't want to say, oh, I can't stop for that character because I have to get to that 2:30 goal. So you're, if that's the time that you're shooting for and you're kind of running in that zone right now, you'll have time to stop for the characters and you won't be like fretting over the sweeper. Like it sounds like your pace is quick enough that you won't have to really be pushing every minute just to make the time cutoff. And in that case, I think you should just kind of run your normal speed, but stop when opportunity arises and embrace the whole day.
I agree 100% with that.
Yep. Sounds right.
Okay. So is that question answered, Kristen, before we move on?
Definitely.
Okay, let's go on to question number two.
All right. Let's get down the question. Kind of along the same lines of training for it. So should I run a practice Dumbo a few weeks before the race? Because I know Jeff Galloway has us going up to 14 miles. But I wasn't sure about if I should actually do a 10K followed by the half just to try it out.
I'll jump in on this one first if it's okay, everybody. I definitely would do that. I know that I think Helen did this too. Mike and Helen and I all did the half marathon in January followed by the marathon relay. And although I think Mike trained for it a lot better than I did at least two times when I did a practice run. It was about, I think I did a 9 mile and a 10 mile, but I think it really helps you to see what muscles are going to be sore, how you're going to feel the next day. I think it's a very good idea to do the practice.
All right.
Helen, why don't you go next?
I agree. I think it's good. You know, I personally wouldn't go the full race distances in my practice one, but I would definitely do something that's going to mimic it, like maybe 4 and 10 or something like that, just so you do have a pretty good feel of what it's going to be like running on those tired legs at least once, especially if you're a worrier. I tend not to be a worrier, but I know a lot of people are, especially for their very first race. And the more comfortable you can make yourself feel before race day, the better off you're going to be.
Helen, do you think that that's why Galloway asked people to go the whole distance to kind of build their confidence?
I think that's definitely one aspect of it. His other reasoning, from what I understand, is about his observations about when people tend to hit the wall. And he feels that people do it within a mile or two of their longest long run. So, and for most people, that's about 20 miles. So if your longest run for a marathon is now 26 miles, you're not going to start feeling the wall or fatigue until mile 25 or 26, or maybe not at all. So that's part of the thing. And a lot of it is people really do worry about whether they can do it. And this eliminates that fear. For me, I would want to cross the finish line the first time for real and get my prize. But a lot of people don't think that way.
I get it. I get a lot of emails from people who are doing their first half marathon. And a lot of them ask the same question. Do I need to run the 13.1 miles before the actual race day? And I understand the confidence that some people really need to have in order to get to the start that day. But really, with the adrenaline going, you really don't have to run those 13 miles. I do agree with, I think Helen said, running on tired legs, you have to learn how to run on tired legs. And I remember that always echoing in my mind when I trained for the back-to-back relay. For two straight weekends, I ran back-to-back half marathons, and I learned how to run on tired legs. But I also learned what is needed in between. And I know I said this on the first question, but I'm going to say it on the second one. You need to look into recovery methods, Kristen, and what will get your legs and your muscles back in condition so they can run the next day. Having said that, this is what I would suggest. I would suggest that you at least do the 10K every weekend and then see what you can do the next day. You want to have that base, because you know you're going to, that's going to be the constant. That's going to be what you have to do the day before, and you need to figure out how fast you can do it, and you need to figure out what kind of a ratio you're going to do. And once you get that set, you can forget about that, and then you can concentrate on the next day. So hopefully that question was answered. Michelle, did you want to add something?
No, I think that I think the way that you ramped up for that was a lot better than the way I ramped up for it. You did it really steadily. So Mike did like a 2-miler on Saturday, then a 4-miler on Sunday, and he really increased every week. He went up just by like a quarter mile for many, many weeks until he got to those two half marathons that he did. I didn't do it. I was just sort of like, oh. I was a little more lackadaisical. So when I got out there that second day, even though I had done some back-to-back runs, my legs were a little sore, more sore.
Now, one more thing. I could tell you where I am right now, Kristen. This past weekend, I did a 10K on Saturday, and then on Sunday, I did just shy of 9 miles. I hope to get into double digits by July, but I'm going to slowly build. Now, the other thing that, before we move on to the next question, is, again, try to figure out what your goals are going to be for not just the first race, but for the second one. And just worrying about finishing is something that a lot of people really worry about and not worry about time. So I would not worry about time. I think it's a great thing to have a goal, but like as Helen said, Disney races are very, very difficult to do PRs and to shoot for a time. So I wouldn't want you to worry about that.
And if you're like us, Kristen, this is not going to be your last Disney race.
Definitely not. I'm already planning on doing ones in the future.
It's a benchmark, and then you can shoot to better that benchmark. Okay, we are ready for the next question.
All right. So, one of the things that I was worried about, because I know you're supposed to eat certain things before a race, but what should I be doing in a back-to-back race situation as far as like food and nutrition goes?
I think Helen should jump in.
Yep.
Well, the first thing you want to do after the 10K is, as soon as you can, you want to make sure you eat some protein. I think I have read that the most important thing is to get it in within 30 minutes, if you can, from when you finish. So when they hand you that little Run Disney box of food, see if there's a protein bar in there. Sometimes there's peanut butter or something like that, and eat that. That's critical, I think. And if you can't get that, try to get, some scrambled eggs or something. Chocolate milk is a really popular protein source, too. I think the ratio is supposed to be 4-to-1carbs to protein at that point. And you want to do that, and you want to hydrate. They're the two most important things.
I would agree. The chocolate milk is always a big winner for me. When I did the back-to-back half and then the half marathon relay, I actually use something called Endorox, which is a protein drink, and I would have it waiting for me in my car at the end of the race, and just kind of, I run on a rail trail, so it's a little bit of a drive to get there, but I would kind of just sip that all the way home, and they're different flavors. I got mine at the vitamin shop. You can get it on Amazon, but definitely push that protein. And the only other thing that I would add is that you want to hydrate, but you don't want to overdo it with the food, at least for me. Everybody's different, but don't feel like, oh, I ran a 10K, now I can just stuff myself because tomorrow I'm going to run a half marathon. You want to definitely eat smart, but I wouldn't have too many greens. I would just eat really kind of conservatively and don't stuff yourself too late into the night because you don't want to get up in the morning and just have a full belly. Mike?
I want to I want to reinforce what Helen said, because I am a very big proponent of getting protein into your system within 30 minutes after you finish that first race. And Michelle and I were at, Helen, I don't know if you were at the race retreat for the half marathon and the marathon relay, but we we had a good breakfast after the half. I went there and we ate, and it's, if you can replenish the you won't be able to replenish all the fluid that you lose, but if you can really do a good job of getting protein in your system, you'll be able to get your metabolism, which is going to be hyped up at that time, to take whatever you give it, and it will disperse it through your muscles and everything, and it will help get rid of that muscle fatigue as quickly as possible. And the chocolate milk is also a favorite of mine. I always grab a bottle at my local grocery store on a Friday night for my weekend runs, and I always think of that as being my my carrot at the end of my runs.
And when is it not a good idea to drink chocolate milk? I mean, any that's true. Excuse, I would just run just to drink the chocolate milk because it's so yummy.
That's true. A lot of protein, and as Helen said, having a protein bar is good too. And then, I mean, there are a couple of other things that that you know we could talk about. Maybe we'll get into them as the other questions are being asked. But definitely think about getting protein into your system and other nourishment within 30 minutes of the race. Michelle, did you want to add one more thing?
The only thing I wanted to add, Kristen, is I think that I'm glad you're thinking about nutrition, and I think that that's just as much a part of the training as the running part, because I think that you're going to find that different things work for you, and it's best to figure it out during this whole training process versus the weekend of. Don't try anything new, but try what works for you. Try chocolate milk. Maybe that doesn't work. Maybe a protein bar works better. Maybe scrambled egg work better. But try that stuff now.
All right. Sounds good.
And we are ready for the next question from Kristen Jensen from Lakewood, California. Kristen.
So we covered the nutrition between the races, but what should I be doing between the 10K and the half as far as rest and recovery goes?
Okay, I'll start on this one. As I start this, I think I need to ask you some questions, Kristen. Are you do you run with a water belt?
Yes, I do.
How many bottles in your water belt?
I carry 2 6-ounce bottles.
Okay. So you have 2 bottles. What do you carry? Do you carry water or electrolyte drink?
I carry 1 bottle with water and 1 with Gatorade.
Very, very good. Okay. What about goo and things like that? Or anything?
I've been trying to do the goo or the different chews and stuff, and I can't get used to them. I've been doing gummy bears pretty much on a lot of my runs, on the longer runs.
I think you have plenty of time, Kristen, to try whatever nutrition options that are out there. Gummy bears, the chews, the goo. Maybe there's a flavor that would give you the opportunity to do the goo. One of the things that I learned listening to running podcasts before this one was that the ultramarathoners, ultra runners who take a lot of goo with them on their long races have learned that it's best not to swallow the goo. What they do is they open up their packet and they smear it on their gums, because that bypasses the stomach and it gets right into their system, and they get that nutrition much quicker. So if you could do that, if you could find some goo flavor that maybe just works for you, that will help in the recovery process. The other thing I wanted to ask you is, do you have compression socks? Have you thought about investing in compression socks?
No, you're talking about the ones that go up on your shin, or?
Yes, they're like compression sleeves. A lot of people who do back-to-back will wear them immediately after the race, and they'll wear them for the rest of the day, and they'll actually wear them at night. It helps their calf muscles recover, and a lot of them will wear them on the very next day for the race. So that's another part of the recovery process that you may want to consider. Helen, do you want to join in?
Yeah, I am a big fan of the compression sleeves and socks. I definitely wear them in between my back-to-backs. Backtracking to what you were saying about the goos and stuff, this is one of the things you want to practice. And if you are better off with real food, you need to figure out what they are. I know a lot of people I run with eat Fig Newtons on their runs instead of goo.
Helen, how many pairs of compression socks do you have? I'm just curious.
I'm embarrassed to answer that
question. All right. You can plead the fifth, but tell me offline.
A lot. Let's put it that way. I have them for all my outfits.
Okay. And they're not cheap, Kristen. They're about $40 a pair. So, but you can get tie-dye ones and all sorts of different ones. I have two pair, and I wish I had more. But, you know, I agree with you. I hate the gel. I really hate it. And I tried the gel blocks. I actually had a cap come off of my mouth during a race once using them, the blocks. I won't use those again. But there, if you go to a running store, or when you, I wouldn't try this out for, you know, when you're there, but at the race expo, they have many different options. There are, you know, different things. The power gel stuff I find works for me. It's a little more liquidy. What I was going to say is, Kristen, you can get other protein bars. Go to your local running store. You can find them at the expo when you go to the expo for these races, but I wouldn't try anything new. I try it during your training runs. But there are some, I can't remember the name of them. They're honeycomb or honey something or other.
Honey Stinger, they're called.
Honey Stinger, thank you. When I was at the Boulder Running Company, I tried some out when I was in Colorado earlier this year. Those are great, too, and I thought I would even eat those as a regular snack. So there are lots of options other than goo.
Are those still gooey, or are they...
No, it's kind of like a cookie.
Okay.
It tastes like honey. It's kind of like a waffle cookie, and they have different flavors. There's strawberry and chocolate. And have you tried them, Helen?
Of course, yes. A cookie and related to running, of course I tried them. But Honey Stinger makes things that are gooey, but they also make these waffle things. So you could try those. And I would also suggest, if you have Whole Foods or a store like that around you, I know our local Whole Foods sells them in the bakery department, and they're way cheaper than the official Honey Stinger branded Stroop waffles, they're called.
So they sell a similar protein?
It's not a protein thing. It's like, it's just that cookie, like that Honey Stinger waffle cookie thing,
right.
is really just for the sugar carb part, not the protein.
Okay.
And they do sell, it's pretty much the exact same thing in most grocery stores, called Stroop waffles.
Cool.
And they cost way less than the energy sports version.
We knew we asked the right person to be on this podcast. Okay, Kristen, do you have another question for us?
I think that was it. Well, as far as recovery between the two races, what should I be doing with that? Like, should I just be resting, or should I keep walking?
Well, I think that I would recommend that you walk around a little bit. I mean, you're going to be at Disney. I don't know how often you get to the parks. How far away is your house from Anaheim?
About 10 miles.
Oh my God.
So not that far.
So you're not going to miss out on anything.
Nah.
So yeah, I would stay off your feet, maybe walk around a little bit afterwards, but pretty much stay off your feet, and not overdo it for the rest of the day. What do you think, Helen?
I agree. Don't overdo it, but it does feel good. You'll know after your 10K, like, how stiff your legs are. So like, if you get up and you're like creaking like an old lady, you want to take a walk. You don't want to sit back down, because you want to stretch that out and work that out. But if you feel fine, you know, you just kind of want to casually keep off your feet and everything. But you don't want to stiffen up like completely. And if you feel that way, walking is the best thing for you.
This is one of those questions, Kristen, where my answer would be, you need to practice what works for you. That is, if you're training and you're doing back-to-back runs, you need to see, you know, how much walking or how much activity you should be doing after your 10K that will enable you to do what you want to do the next day. I think that it's obvious that you want to get to bed early because it's an early start. Personally, I'd say by early afternoon, mid-afternoon, I'm probably ready to pack it in. And by that, I mean not walk around, try to get off my feet, have a nice dinner, but not too much, and get ready for the next day. I think one of the things that we learn when we train is what works as far as recovery. And one of the things that also is always said is, don't do anything new on race day. So whatever you practice and whatever works when you practice is what you should practice on the race day, on the race weekend. So are we done?
Chris, do you have any more questions?
No, I don't have any more questions. I think you guys covered pretty much everything I was concerned about.
That's great.
So how do you feel? You feel confident?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm definitely excited, but yeah, I'm feeling confident, more confident every week.
It's kind of nice that you know the area too, so you could actually do kind of a practice run. Maybe not run around the park, but that outside park. And I don't think that they're going to appreciate you asking to run around in Anaheim Stadium either, but some of the streets around there, you could know the incline and know what's expected of you. So
go
ahead, Kristen. Go ahead.
I just ran a race down at Angel Stadium a month ago, so I know that path.
There you go. That's great. So will you report back to us and tell us how all our advice was perfect and you did a great job?
Absolutely.
Or tell us where we went wrong and what we should say differently.
No, all your advice was great.
Number one, we want to thank Helen Dunn for—that rhymes. We want to thank Helen for coming on, and I'm sure we'll have you on again, Helen, because, like I said, you are our ringer.
Well, I think it's really fun to be on the show, so anytime you need me, give me a call.
We love you, Helen.
And Kristen, we want to thank you for coming on. I know that there are people who are very nervous about coming on a podcast, but you did great. You asked the questions that I think a lot of people had, and hopefully we helped not just you, but many others out there. We wish everybody luck, and especially you. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you. I appreciate all the great advice.
And Michelle, thank you for coming on the show, too.
And thank you, Mike, for coming on the show, too.
That's what I do.
Okay, now virtual,
I do podcasts.
Virtual group hug, coast to coast.
That's right. East meets West. And that'll do it for the Mickey Mouse podcast. And the Mickey Mouse podcast has been brought to you by MEI Travel and Mouse Fan Travel. They offer you the best service in the travel industry. And if you haven't tried them yet, well, guess what? You haven't seen what the best is all about. We want you to give them a try at mei-travel.com or mousefantravel.com. And as always, you can always get to their site by going to the Mickey Mouse Podcast website and clicking on their banner. So for Helen Dunn, for Kristen Jensen, and for Michelle Scribner-McLean, my name is Mike Scopa. We'll see you on the road.
Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Mickey Miles Podcast. We hope you enjoyed listening. Our discussion continues on Facebook at facebook.com/Mickey Miles Podcast, where you can give us your comments and feedback on the show. You can also follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/Mickey Miles Pod. And if you have any questions for us, you can send them to questions@MickeyMilesPodcast.com. We'll try to answer them as soon as possible. For all of us here at the Mickey Miles Podcast, this is Rick Gray saying until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the road.